The field turns for home.
They're at the top of the stretch.
Top of the stretch.
They're into the stretch.
And here they come into the final furlong.
Final furlong.
Into the final furlong.
They go inside the final furlong.
This is the final furlong on HRRN Live. It's Trainer Talk Wednesday, presented by Bullet Train. Frankel's three-quarter brother, standing at Wintergreen Stallion Station. Now, here's Mike Pena and Jude Feld.
Good afternoon once again, everybody, and welcome to this final furlong edition, this Trainer Talk edition of the show, all presented by Bullet Train, Frankel's three-quarter brother, standing at Wintergreen Stallion Station. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, the Pontiff of the Pick Four, and we do welcome everybody just joining us across the country on Sirius Channel 93, and all of you who have been with us for the past few hours on XM 209, welcome to the show, and boy, do we have a great show on tap for you here tonight. Rudy Rodriguez is going to be with us to tell us his story in the first half of the show, and then trainer Dallas Stewart will be here in the second half. So JT, a lot of things to look forward to over the course of the next hour.
Yeah, Rudy Rodriguez by popular demand, I might add.
Yeah, that's right. We had a phone call, what, 3 or 4 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Asking about hearing Rudy's story.
Right. So I'm looking forward to it as well. I don't know Rudy. I've never met him, so I'm dying to hear his life.
And not to be confused with the Rudy of Notre Dame fame, right?
No.
Rudy Rodriguez, the 40-year-old native of Mexico, nice enough to spend some time with us here tonight. Rudy, thanks so much for taking the time and welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Rudy, when you look back at your career, you are one of several trainers now to have made that transition from being a jockey then to a trainer. 221 winners is what you had in the saddle, and now you've saddled 331 winners on the training side. So it's been quite a ride for you.
It's been amazing. You know, it's just, I don't know, it's tough. You know, we've been very, very blessed. You know, everything is working out good for us, and we got a lot of owners to support us. You know, it's been very, very good so far.
Well, let's go all the way back to the beginning. I mentioned you're a native of Mexico. Talk about growing up in Mexico and how you got into working with horses.
You know, when over there by home, we always have animals, horses, cows, you name it, you know, chickens, everything. But, you know, everybody back home, we trying to come to the United States for a better living. An opportunity to work, I guess, you know, and I don't know, I'm very, very blessed. Since I come to this country, everything is very, has been very, very good for me.
Did you work with horses in Mexico?
You know, no horses, you know, cows, milk cows, pigs, you know, you got a couple of horses there, but no, like race horses, you know, just to go and mount them, get on then and go to the field or whatever, you know, but over here is different.
So you came to the United States and worked your way into the racetrack. You started out grooming horses, or were you already riding horses?
No, really no. When I come to this country, I was in Florida picking orange, cucumbers, pecans, strawberries, and I got the opportunity to go to Gulfstream, and I started walking horses there, and I went to Jersey. I tried to learn how to gallop and grooming and doing everything.
So you worked your way up.
A couple months later, I was in New York walking horses and working for Richard Dutro Sr. And he gave me the opportunity to tap the horse and the cheddar and send me to the track few months later and start galloping horses for a few years. I worked for Mr. Dutro for a long time. And I don't know, it's been it's been an amazing run, that's for sure.
So when you came to the United States, you weren't even thinking about horse racing.
Not at all. If you tell me I was going to be in the horse business, I was telling you lying, because I don't know. I was just looking for work, looking for to get a paycheck and send some money back home, this and that, and keep working.
So how did you get into racing then? Wasn't your brother a rider?
My brother, Jesse, he was, at the time, he was riding in Gulfstream. So he asked me if I want to come go back with him and try to work with the horses. I said, sure. So everything was new for me over here in this country. And to be with my brother, it was going to be a lot more easy. Plus, he knows some people and work with the horses. So I was looking to learn how to gallop. And he knows some people in Jersey that they got some farms. So he used to go gallop horses on the farm and ride some horses. So it was a very good thing to he was working with the horses, though.
So you galloped some on the farm, then you came to the racetrack and started working. You're only 40 years old, so this happened in a relatively short period of time, huh?
Yes. I mean, I'm very, very blessed in God, you know. Everything went very, very quick, you know. It's like time.
So
everything
goes
very quick.
Yeah.
So I guess in the process, I was at the right time, and everything is moving very well.
So you rode, you must have rode for, what, a couple of years?
I don't know, 18, 19 years.
Oh, you rode 19 20. Years. Uh-huh. And then you started, when did you start being an assistant trainer?
I was working with Tutro Junior for a while, and I was doing, you name it, I was doing pretty much everything for. I was being an assistant, galloping horses, go with the horse that he ship out of town, being around the barn almost all day. I love to be around horses, and I guess make it easy for me to be in. And the horse all day.
A guy that enjoys his work.
Pretty much that's what it is, I guess, you know. Cause right now my wife, she's gonna throw me out if I don't keep coming home. You know, but she's very supportive and everything, so very, very good. I got a very good family too. So
where did you meet her? Did you meet her here in the United States or in Mexico?
No, I meet her over here. I meet her over here when I was riding. So,
she just couldn't resist that handsome jockey, right?
I guess you can say that, you know. Wait till she hears this.
Trainer Rudy Rodriguez, our special guest here on Trainer Talk tonight on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Rudy, again, as Jude said, this all happened in a fairly quick, short amount of time for you. What do you remember about that first time that you climbed aboard a horse, started galloping? What are some of those memories that come back to you when you think about the early days?
I was just through, you know, it was very exciting to be around horses and to be able to gallop, and I just was kind of excited, and I love it. I love it. So, you know, I was a guy that I don't want to stay in one place. I want to try to keep moving and keep learning, and everything. After that, everything kept moving very, very quick, though, you know, because I galloped for like 2 years, and then I was, and the next thing I know, I was riding one already. So, you know, it was very, very fast. So, I mean, very lucky. That's what it is, you know.
Well, and you've gotten to the top of the mountain, so to speak, on the training side of things, but you were there as a rider. You won the Suburban Handicap. A lot of people may forget that in 2008. You upset the Suburban Handicap with Frost Giant. Talk about that.
Like I tell you, you got to be at the right time and I guess at the right time, you know. That horse, he was supposed to run 2 days before in a lab one race with Gary Gomez. And Rick was thinking to enter the horse in the Suburban, and I guess they need a rider, and he gave me the opportunity because the horse was a mentor, and he was very, very tough to handle, and I don't know, he was tough. Troy Giant was a tough horse to be around. He don't let you pretty much do nothing. He wants to do everything himself. But then, you know, Rick gave the opportunity to ride a horse, and the owner, Andy Cohn, I guess he really don't care too much who was riding the horse. And it was a very, very, very good story, I guess you can say, down, because we ended up winning that race, you know. Rick got another horse in the race. He was a favorite. What's his name? Rising Moon.
Yep.
That was the favorite in the race. And, you know, the race looked like it was supposed to be for Frost Giant, and it came out that way, you know. And Frost Giant and Roy Rodriguez win the Grade One. So that was a very good, you know.
When did you decide to stop riding and become a trainer, and what led to that decision?
A lot of bad horses I was riding, you know. A lot of bad horses, you know. I was trying hard and never got a chance to ride good horses, and always riding bad horses and long shots, and, you know, was at the point that I was getting her alarm. And my brother was trying to tell me, you know, you got to stop riding that horse. You're going to kill yourself. But, you know, I love him, you know. A lot of my wife, too, used to tell me, you got to stop riding this. You got to do this. You got to do this. But one thing for sure, I love to ride horses. That's, you know, if you tell me right now, I still want to ride, you know. I breathe a lot of my horses right now, and everything else, but I don't know. It's just something that is in your blood that you want to do it, and I guess you want to keep doing it.
But
it's not easy. Very dangerous, though, for sure.
Yeah, it is dangerous, and you know, there's a lot of riders that feel that way. I mean, look at Gary Stevens now. He was off for about 7 years, and now back riding again because he missed it so much. And it seems like it gets into your blood, and you really have a hard time leaving it. But
yeah, it's true. You know, look, you say Gary, you know, and he retired a couple of times and come back, and it's tough, though. So, you know, you still feel like I wanted to ride, you know?
Yeah.
You get very attached to what you do, and especially when you love it, you know. I guess when you love it, it's a lot more hard to let it go by. But, you know, right now we got the opportunity, and we got a lot of people that support us and give us the opportunity to train for them, and it's been very, very good.
Well, now you have the opportunity to breeze horses before they run and gallop them or do whatever you want to do with them. Talk about that and what kind of edge that gives you as a trainer.
I don't think it's an edge. You know, I think most of the thing is, you know, at least you got an idea. If you breeze in your horse, you know, if you don't feel comfortable, you don't go and tell the trainer, you know, let's try to do this. He don't feel comfortable, let's try to scope him because he looked like he was breathing good or stop. I guess that's the thing is, the bend is there, you know, that you got a lot of more going for you, because if the horse don't feel comfortable, you don't gonna go and push him. And, you know, like a lot of the guys, they want a good work, and pretty much if you don't feel comfortable with the horse, or the horse don't seem like he's right, I just skip one day or 2 days and figure out why he was trying to get out, or why he's not working this way, or why I'm gonna run this horse when he's not working good. So I guess it's an advantage with me there, you know, if the horse don't work good, I don't need to run him. I wait another week until he tell me that he's ready, you know, or at least that he was working better than what he did. No, I don't know.
Talking with trainer Rudy Rodriguez here on Trainer Talk, presented by Bullet Train on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Rudy, you mentioned working with the Dutrows, Rick Dutrow Jr. and Sr. You also had a time where you worked with Bobby Frankel. Talk about some of those trainers that helped you along the way as you were coming up.
You know, working for Rick, it was very, very good experience. and working for his father, because they're very, very good horsemen. They take care of the horses like nobody else does. And that's what I'm trying to do, you know. And I'm very sad what happened to Rick, that's for sure, you know. But I don't know, you know. I don't think he deserved to the ponies that they give him, but he's a very good horseman. And I was very blessed to work for them, that's for sure. And working for Bobby, you know, was, you know, when at the time Rick got some Fleming horses and Bobby got all Grade One horses, and I used to breed some horses for Bobby all the time for the last, you can say, since he started coming back to New York. I was getting him one or two, and I got the opportunity to work a lot of good horses for him, and I was working for Rick and at the time, so, you know, but it was very, very good experience for me, and learning press process. They help me right now, you know. At least I know the Fleming horses and the good horses with Bobby, you know. All the horses that he got was all Grade One horses, and very, very good horsemen too.
Yeah, he was a heck of a trainer, and he always had such a good rapport with his riders. He would discuss each horse with the rider and get their input and adjust his training accordingly, which a lot of trainers don't do.
Yeah, that's the good thing to work for them, you know. Even Rick, you know. Rick is a very, very good listener, you know. He communicates very good with his people that work around him. He probably don't listen pretty much to nobody else, but, you know, if you're groom, tell him something, he pay attention. The writer tell him something, he will pay more attention to them people than the rest of the world, I guess, you know. And pay attention very close to his horses. And I guess that's why he was winning so many races, though. I don't know. You know, but he was very, very listen. He used to listen a lot to people that work around him, though.
Rudy, what is a horse or a couple of horses that you've had the privilege to be around, either as a rider or a trainer, that you're just never going to forget?
You know, I was around St. Leon for Rick. I used to gallop flawlessly for Mr. Dutro Sr. I used to gallop Medalia de Oro, Estarine, Squirrel for Bobby Franco, Cy Seek. I breezed a couple of times, Ghost Hopper. You name it, you know, Denon. I spent a lot of time with Denon. Very, very good horses Bobby have, you know. Rick have a lot of horses too. The St. Liam, Silver Train. They got Awfully Wild. The day was not too good. They ended up turning out to be very good horses. But, you know, even St. Liam, when we got him, he can even walk, and Rick started working with his feet, and the Blasman started with his feet and everything, and then very good. You know, I don't know. It's a lot of nice horses, though, very nice horses.
How about the favorite horse that you've trained? Do you have a favorite or a couple of favorites that have come through your barn?
Excuse me?
Do you have a couple of favorite horses that you've trained that you're really going to remember for a while?
You know, we're going to remember a lot of nice horses that have been through our barn too, you know. I got Endless Circle. I got Agave Kiss. We got Atemecula Creek. Right now we got Bajak. We got My Happy Face. That horse, they're going to be hard to forget about it because, you know, like Temecula Creek, he was probably one of our best claims we did. Endless Circle. You know, we've been very lucky. The horse is running very good, you know, but it's, you know, we pay very, very good attention to them, and then they've been running good for us, that's for sure.
Yeah, Temecula Creek, very nice horse, Agave Kiss, and those horses, you know, they really can put you on the map. My Happy Face, sensational filly. Talk about her a little bit.
You know, since the day one when Mr. Michael Dapp gave us the opportunity to train some babies up, she was one of our favorites because she was she was doing everything what you asked her for to do him. And, you know, when he was talking about Saratoga, I tell Mike, I think she can win a man in a special way in Saratoga. And he said, yeah, sure, yeah. I tell him, you know, she's showing us this in the morning, and she showed us the day she ran in Saratoga that she was special, you know. We got be first time we run him at Music Philly run, he break the trap record, and then she come back and win by 20-something lines, and wow, she just, it was unbelievable, though, to see her do that. It was very, very special.
Rudy, how did you go about obtaining your clients and your owners when you got into training?
Excuse me?
How did you go about getting the clients and trainers, clients and owners when you got into training?
You know, I was very lucky to work for Rick, like I tell you, and I used to hang around with a lot of the owners that he used to train for. And a lot of the owners that Rick used to train, he gave us the opportunity. Our first owner was Steve Esperanza. Very, very good. And he's a very good friend. And I still got some horses with him, and he support us a lot, that's for sure, you know. He believed in us that we can do the job, and he gave us the opportunity to train for him. And then later on, come up Pini Scuderi, Chip Parciano, Jim Riccio, Michael Dapp, Michael Imperio is another very, very good owner, and they know the game and make it a lot easy for us to try to train our horses and try to play the horse in the right spot, because they know how the game goes, you know.
Yeah, that's always an advantage when the owner understands the ups and downs of racing, and you don't have so much explaining to do.
That you can say that, you know, it's a lot more easy, you know. And you know, we got up and downs, and some horses get hurt and some don't, and some they end up making them, and some we got to regroup and put them where they can win. But we've been very lucky to train for these guys, because they understand the game, and they know it's a lot more downs than ups. So, you know, but you know, they very good.
Rudy, you mentioned how your wife has been extremely supportive throughout your career. Spend a couple of minutes talking about her and about your family and what they've meant to you and to the meteoric rise that you've had.
You know, she's been with me for a long, long time. I met her for, I don't know. And we got three kids, but she's been very good, you know. She supports a lot, and she takes a lot of it, because sometimes even when I used to work for Rick, I used to go out of town. Rick said, you know, I need to go to Canada. I need to go to Kentucky. I need to go to Palmetto for a week. And she's very, very supporting what I'm doing. And she don't like too much about horses. She don't know too many things about horses. She's not a horse person, but she knows what I'm doing. And I'm very lucky. Very lucky to have her as my wife.
You
got three beautiful children, and I got my brother with me. That he's my right hand. When I go out of town, when I go to Florida, he stay in charge of everything. And when we stay here, we try to do everything what we can to accommodate everything the right way and keep going.
You mentioned that your wife can get a little angry with you when you don't come home because you're spending so much time at the barn. when you're not around the barn, what do you like to do? What are your hobbies?
You know, I don't do too much after that. You know, we're pretty much, I love to be around horses. You know, when I come home, like Mondays or Tuesdays, I try to pick up the kids from school. Jogging, I used to jog a lot. Right now my knee is not too good, but I try to go to the gym for a little bit and watch movies. I don't know. Little bit of everything.
Well, Rudy, you had so much success, and we really can't thank you enough for taking the time to be with us here on the show today. It's been great to visit with you and to hear your story. Like I said, we had a listener call in that said, hey, I want to hear the Rudy Rodriguez story. So now everybody knows, and we really appreciate you taking the time.
No, thank you. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you.
All right, keep up the good work, Rudy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Rudy Rodriguez, our special guest here in the first half of the show. Dallas Stewart coming up in a few minutes. He'll be with us to visit with us here in the second half. Looking forward to hearing his story. But Rudy, what a great story, huh?
I mean,
to just come here from Mexico.
The American dream, basically.
Yeah. Right.
Come to the United States, make a life, and he's only 40 years old, and he's gone from, you know, picking vegetables in Florida to galloping horses, riding races, and now training horses. Fantastic. As you said, meteoric rise to stardom, really. And he's one of the top trainers on the New York circuit, arguably one of the best circuits in the world.
Yeah, amazing. And to see him get to the top of the game in both professions, right? To be there and win a grade one with Frost Giant, 40-1 upset in the 2008 Suburban.
And that was only 2008.
And here he is. He's already trained more winners in this short time than he rode in, 18 years?
Yeah, that's wild.
Great story.
Yeah.
Great story. Really nice guy, too. We want to thank Rudy for taking the time. Dallas Stewart, another Dwayne Lucas disciple, going to be with us here in the second half of the show. Can't wait to hear from Dallas and hear his story.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I've known Dallas for, I don't know, too long, 30 years.
Well, again, the show all presented by Bullet Train, Frankel's three-quarter brother, standing at Wintergreen Stallion Station. Visit wintergreenstallionstation.com for more information on Bullet Train. Time to get on board. We're going to get to a break. We'll come back with Dallas Stewart. He's coming up next here on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Presented by Bullet Train on HRRN. Bullet Train. It's time to get on board.
Group-winning Bullet Train, the sensational three-quarter brother to the amazing racehorse Frankel, has captured the hearts and dreams of everyone who's seen him. Handsome and correct, he was precocious enough to win his debut at two with a massive 113 time form rating. Bullet Train had the speed American breeders seek and the class to defeat 11 horses who won or placed in a Group 1. And his pedigree, well, being bred by Judmont Farm, says it all. This year, Bullet Train joins Montjoux and Galileo as top sons of Sadler's Wells at stud. He stands at Wintergreen Stallion Station in Midway, Kentucky, for a $7,500 stud fee. For more information, call Sean Feld at 859-519-9665. Bullet Train has arrived at the station. It's time to get on board.
You can be a better better just by knowing how a horse is working.
For the first time ever, RacingWithBruno.com's reports are available straight from the source.
Racing with Bruno's With the Works takes you behind the past performances into the morning routines that matter most.
With over 20 years of experience, our team of analysts specialize in first-time starters and layoff horses, as well as full-card workout reports and selections.
Go to RacingWithBruno.com.
Now with the works.
The Wizards betting window is now new and improved. Available exclusively at DRF.com, the Wizards betting window takes the work out of wagering by giving you just the Wizards' best plays and strongest opinions for wagering recommendations at top tracks around the country. Along with win and plays, the betting window includes pick threes, pick fours, and pick sixes, and 10-cent superfectas wherever possible. Both longtime horse players and racing newcomers can benefit from using the betting window. It's like no other handicapping sheet in the market. Only the Wizards betting window offers real-time changes to reflect late scratches, changing track and weather conditions, late equipment changes, and more. Just download the betting window while you do your handicapping in advance and then receive an updated final edition 30 to 60 minutes before the first race post time. The betting window final edition will be delivered right to your inbox so you can receive it anywhere you wager. Use the Wizard's best wagering strategies to help maximize your returns. Visit drf.com/wizbw to try the Wizard's betting window today. That's drf.com/WizBW.
RacehorseReport.com.
What is it?
What is it?
What is it, baby?
International racing.
weekend stakes recaps, always free selections, great stories, workout information, racing news, handicapping tips, spot plays, and more.
It's as marvelous and as simple as that.
Join thousands of other thoroughbred racing fans by going to racehorsereport.com. Make racehorsereport.com your number one source for thoroughbred racing information.
That's great.
racehorsereport.com.
You're listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Bullet Train on HRRN. Bullet Train, it's time to get on board.
Welcome back to this Trainer Talk edition of the Final Furlong Show here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, our producer Lee Delapina, all with you in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. A great visit with trainer Rudy Rodriguez in the first half of the show, and really looking forward to this second half as we visit with trainer Dallas Stewart, the 53-year-old native of New Orleans. He joins us live from the fairgrounds here today. Dallas, thanks for taking the time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, happy to have you on board here. And look, you have been somebody who has won races at the top level of the game, and you've won them at the bottom level of the game. You excel at all levels, and it's been a remarkable ride for you. As I mentioned earlier, this is a show where we talk about your history and your background and how you got started. So take us back to the beginning, and how did Dallas Stewart get hooked on horse racing?
Well, just, you know, basic love for the horses, and started riding early on and started working at the fairgrounds when I was 15, galloping horses. And, you know, just been loving it ever since and just worked my way up. I worked for a couple of different people down here in New Orleans and hooked up with Wayne Lucas in 86 and traveled around with him for about 11 years and then started on my own in 97. So it's just been just the love of the horse and enjoying the game, and it's been great.
Did you start like so many others where you were just a fan and then kind of got into it from there?
I really didn't know anything about horse racing, just, you know, riding horses, and fell in love with exercise and on the farm, and, you know, just moved over to the track and, you know, just took right to it, knew it's what I wanted to do at an early age for sure.
Well, Louisiana has such a great culture of riders and racing and of course fun. I mean, you're coming off, one of the biggest weekends ever in New Orleans. But talk about starting out at the fairgrounds. I mean, that's pretty big time, and how that had an effect on your career.
Yeah, I mean, it was always nice horses here. And, you know, I was young, 15, 16, still in high school when I was working out here at the track. And, you know, just figured that this is something that I wanted to do, and thought I was pretty good at it, and went on with it. So it was, it's been great, you know. Just loved it out since I was young.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Dallas, but doesn't it go back a few years earlier than that when your grandfather gave you a horse? Didn't I read that somewhere?
Yeah, it was, you know, 13, 14, just a riding horse, and they had some race horses at the stable where we were growing up, and we started helping those guys. You know, they got some free help, so they taught us how to exercise the horses. And, you know, next thing you know, we were 14, 15, ready to go to the racetrack. So that's the way that went.
Jude mentioned that fun weekend down there in New Orleans with the Super Bowl. Did you get a chance to go?
No, I didn't. We just went to some friend's house and enjoyed it that way. But it was great. It was a great game, and looked like the town was rolling. And so it's pretty neat.
Does that help the fairgrounds when they get an event like the Super Bowl in town? Do you get more people out to the races?
Sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. It just depends. You know, there was a lot of free concerts and a lot of things going on in this city. So I didn't really think the Super Bowl helped it much. But sometimes, you know, like with the Final Four, if Kentucky plays, you know, there's people that will come to the races and stuff. So it just depends.
Well, it's a great place to race, and you've had a lot of success there. How many years have you been training at the fairgrounds?
Well, I've been training on my own since 97, but before that, in the early 80s, I had a couple of horses that I owned and trained myself, probably in 84, 85, somewhere right up in there. So, yeah, a long time.
What led you to want to become a trainer? You mentioned you were galloping horses and working as an exercise rider. What finally spurred you to say, okay, I want to become a trainer and do this as my profession?
Well, I just figured it was something that I was good at, something that I liked, and something I could handle. And, you figure in life you want to do something that you like and that you're good at. So I just tried to put those two together, and hopefully it served me well.
So your first job, your first trainer you ever worked for was who?
Probably a guy named Connie Tisistro, a local gentleman here, an older guy downtown. He's no longer training. But, I was just kind of exercising horses for different people, kind of like what they call freelancing. But he was probably the first guy that I worked steady for that taught me a lot about horses' legs and how to do them up and how to take care of them and the basic care of a horse.
Well, you worked for Wayne Lucas for 11 years, you said, and that had to be way better than going to college.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been like military work. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe not that bad, but it was pretty regimented. So
you got to say that. Learn how to rake the shed row in herringbone pattern.
Yeah, that was just a little bit of it.
How'd you end up working for Wayne?
Well, actually, Randy Bradshaw brought some horses down here, and I went over and talked to him. And he was going to Minnesota. I was looking to make a little bit of a change. I wasn't wanting to go back to Louisiana Downs. And he said, sure, he would take me on. So I went up there and started working for Randy Bradshaw, who was the assistant for Wayne Lucas at the time. And we hit it off real well. And he said, hey, you ought to think about trying to come on steady with this guy and see if you can work your way up the ladder. He says, I think you can do it. So I went out to California, joined him out there, and one thing led to the next.
You know, we've had several Wayne Lucas disciples on this Trainer Talk show, Dallas. Todd joined us a few weeks back, and Kieran was on here when we first launched the show. They all have that favorite D. Wayne Lucas story. Do you have one?
The favorite one. I'd probably be my experience with Winning Colors. I mean, not really a story about him or, you know, just working for him. I mean, I was an exercise rider and worked my way up to like a foreman spot and into like an assistant spot. But I was the exercise rider for Winning Colors and started galloping her a week before the Kentucky Derby. And we got that done. So, you know, that was pretty special. But I got a lot of great memories working for him, a lot of fun times. So, I mean, I don't know about any particular ones, but, you know, that would stand out as a real special one to me personally.
I can imagine Winning Colors so brilliant and then going on and beating the boys in the Kentucky Derby. How about your favorite Winning Colors story?
That would probably be it. You know, I had got on her a few days and she had went really well. And then she was in the stall. We were waiting to go out. And a guy that was had been galloping her named Otto, who did a great job with her all through her early career in California. And when she came into the Derby, she just got really, really tough. And sometimes a switch of a rider can make that little bit of a difference. And it doesn't matter if one rider is better than the other. You know, if they're both really good exercise riders, sometimes a little switch, you know, can be a plus to keep the horse settled down. Sometimes. So they decided to go with that, and I was the guy. And Otto had been galloping her, but she was in the stall and she was standing at the front of the stall and she was just shaking her head and you could just see that she was going to be a bear that day. And he looked over at me and he said, eat your Wheaties today, big boy. And I said, I'm going to show you right now what it's all about. And every time I took her out there and galloped her and brought her back. And Anyhow, when I see Otto from time to time, I'll ask him, I'll say, eat your Wheaties, big boy.
So describe that race and that moment as she's coming down the stretch, and obviously it's elation when she wins. But talk about that and describe what you were going through.
Well, I mean, we just thought she could win it back, you know, way back. She was just so strong. I mean, probably to this day, maybe the strongest horse I was ever around on a daily basis, just so strong. And, you know, she just took the lead, and Gary did a great job, got her out there, settled her, and just, I mean, turned for home. I just knew she'd be tough to beat because she was just so fit and ready. So, you know, it was just total elation, and I was very proud to be a part of it, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's something that's irreplaceable. But you've had plenty of stakes winners of your own. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Well, yeah, it's been good. You know, I've fortunately, you know, I've owned pieces of a couple of them that have won some big races. The first good one we had was a horse named Nasty Storm. Owned her with some guys in Louisville, and we sold her for $1,000,001. So that was a good, you know, she won some good races. I think she won 4 or 5 stakes. And the next one was Lemons Forever. Of course, I owned a piece of her, and she won the Oaks, and we sold her. So, you know, just those being a part owner and winning some big races is where, you know, it's pretty special. So, and I've won a lot of other, you know, big races that, you know, maybe that I didn't own, but were special to me, and been fortunate to train some nice horses, and got a couple of nice colts in the barn right now. I don't own a piece of them, but they're very, very nice horses. So,
is there more pressure or less pressure when you own a piece of a horse that you're training, Dallas?
Oh, I don't think that it's more or less. It's just a matter of, you know, trying to get the job done. It's, you know, it's like a puzzle, putting it together, holding it together, and, you know, hopefully the pieces don't fall apart on you. I don't think it's pressure either way. Just, you know, trying to get the job done is the challenge.
I always laugh because there's a lot of owners that think that the horse gets more special attention when the trainer owns a piece of it. And that couldn't be further from the truth. Usually that horse goes in the worst stall, might have the worst groom.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we try to do a good job with all of them, and then hopefully we can, you know, keep somebody happy.
Yeah. It really cracks me up that they figure they're going to take an edge by making sure the trainer has a piece.
Well, I think the other side of it too is if they feel like they lose and you lose too, that's a good thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, another horse that took you on a fun ride was Dollar Bill. Talk about him for a little bit.
Yeah, he was a real special sweet horse. He trained really well, ran second his first out at Saratoga, and then came back and won. And, you know, he had some hard luck throughout his races, but you know, he was all hard. He tried well. Should have won the Louisiana Derby down here. Had a really bad trip, and you know, he's very competitive in some good races and a fun horse to be around. He was just a beautiful horse, and I was just glad to be around him. He was a sweetie.
You trained for Mr. Young for a lot of years, William T. Young. Talk about that relationship and what that did for your career.
Yeah, you know, I started out working for, you know, with them, with Wayne and with Grindstone and a lot of other good horses, and just to develop the relationship over the years with that, with those guys. And Mr. Young gave me a few horses to train, and then it just built over that time. And, you know, with him and his family, they was always supportive, so supportive, and just great people to train for. And, you know, can just be glad to say that I trained for him in my life. It was fun.
Dallas, what are some of the things that you learned when you were working for Wayne that you're still incorporating into your operation today?
Well, you just got to be really dedicated and stay on task. And, you know, even when things are, you know, it's like a roller coaster up and down, stay on task, stay on, you know, stay on, and, you know, believe and know what you're doing is good. And don't forget, you know, the basic care of the horse and take care of him and do the right thing. And it'll all come out sooner or later.
Yeah, this is a game where they say that there's the highest highs and the lowest lows, and you've obviously been to the top of the mountain, and you've had times where things have struggled, just like every other trainer. One thing that came up as I was watching a lot of the conversation after the Super Bowl, and people were interviewing several of the Ravens players, and they said, was it difficult to maintain your confidence when San Francisco was making that big comeback, and did you lose confidence? How about for you as a trainer, when things aren't quite going 100% the way you'd like them to, is it difficult to maintain that confidence, and how do you keep that confidence?
I don't think it's difficult to maintain it because I love it so much. So it's not about the money for me. It's just, you know, I want to train good horses, and I want to do well, and I want to do everybody a good job. And, you know, so I never lose confidence in myself or the people that work, the people that have been working for me for years. And, you know, we just get up and carry on every day. And, you know, sometimes we have good weeks. Sometimes we have slow weeks, slow months. You know, sometimes it's a slow year, but you just keep on working. And, I mean, I do it because I love it, and that's been good to me. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, there's nothing better than going to a job that you absolutely adore. It's like you don't work a day in your life, really.
Yeah, I mean, and I love every aspect of it, you know, so it doesn't bother me to do a horse off, to walk a horse. I don't gallop anymore, but none of it bothers me. I love every part of it. I'm excited. I'm excited every morning to go to work and to be a part of what I do, for sure.
And that's a great
whether I've got 10 horses or 100. I love it. It doesn't matter.
That's a great example to your help, too, when you're willing to get in there and do a horse's legs up or, you know, muck a stall or whatever. The help really appreciates the fact that you don't ask them to do something that you wouldn't do yourself.
Yeah, none of it bothers me. I like all aspects of it. No problem.
Trainer Dallas Stewart, our special guest here on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, all presented by Bullet Train, standing at Wintergreen Stallion Station. Dallas, when you look back throughout your career, whether it's working, coming up as an exercise rider or with Wayne or working on your own, what are some of the horses that really stick out to you? You mentioned Winning Colors. We talked about Dollar Bill and Nasty Storm. Who are some of the other horses that really stand out and why?
Well, like Lemons Forever, you know, she gave us such a big race that day. She was way back, and she passed everybody at their fastest point. You know, she just kept running, and, you know, she came right on the right day. And that's the special part about the game, that if you get, you know, the right horse on the right day and the big race is there, you know, you can get the job done. And she was special. It was a nice filly for Terry Finley. I trained named Sweet in the Net. She won 5 stakes, and she was a very special horse. A horse for Overbrook named Clockstopper. He was a real, real hard knocking horse. Umbrella Lane, she was right there, you know, on the right day. Let's see who else. There's been a lot of them, but you know, I mean, I got 2 nice colts in my barn now. I'm hopeful for them, so. You know, they're pretty much on my mind the whole time right now. So, but there's been some good horses, and they've all been, you know, I've been fortunate to train for really, really nice people through my whole career. I've been associated with good people that have given me good horses, and I'm very appreciative of them to entrust me with their horses, and hopefully I've done them a good job, you know.
What about a horse that people don't know that you might have done your best training job, or a little horse that you developed, you know, that nobody really knows about?
Well, you know, I don't want to leave Macho again out. You know, he was a special horse too. That's one that came to mind. You know, and he was one that, you know, I mean, he ran a great race against Rachel Alexander, and that was a terrific, terrific race. You hate to see any horse lose that race. Unfortunately, it was mine. But, I mean, I don't know, Jude. I can't really come. There's been a couple through the years that maybe have gotten hurt, you know, early on, that I thought that really had a lot of talent and, you know, could have gotten to the big time. No real name comes to mind, but I know there's been a few that, you know, that I had high hopes for, that maybe injury or bad luck got a hold of them here and there. But and a horse named Silverfoot, he was a really nice horse one. A little handicapped 3 times in a row. So, but like I say, I've been very fortunate to train for nice people, you know, very good people.
And Dallas, you mentioned Unbridled Elaine, winner of the 2001 Breeders' Cup Distaff. Talk about a little bit more about her and what that ride was like.
Well, it was kind of crazy because the guy that owned it, I mean, he fired me about 3 times. He rehired me a couple weeks before that race, and it was just kind of wild. And you know, I had the horse early on, he fired me, then he rehired me, and then I won the Breeders' Cup, and then he fired me again. I think he might have hired me again after that, I can't remember. But you know, the guy was always nice, he paid his bills, and you know, it was just a crazy ride. But she was a great filly, and Pat Day gave her one great ride that day. He was in trouble, and he got her out, and I was it was kind of a little bit of a funny story. Here's a funny story about Wayne Lucas. Like, he had Spain in the race, and they were coming down to the wire, and when they showed it on the live, you couldn't really see who won it. And then when they showed the slow-mo,
I was standing right next to him, and we were both leaning like you were, you know, like you lean into the wire. And then when they hit the wire, I looked over him and I said, "Got you, big boy." He said, "Did you give me?" I said, "Yeah, for $2 million." And he said, "Oh, go take your picture." So that was a good one. I said, "I got you, big boy."
The student had become the teacher.
Well, it was just one good day. It was a good day on a good payday. So he didn't need the money. It didn't matter.
That's a great story.
Dallas Stewart joining us here on Trainer Talk on the Final Furlong Show on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Dallas, is there another trainer or a couple of trainers that you have kind of a friendly rivalry with like that with Wayne, where you like to kind of needle them a little bit when you get to beat them?
No, probably just him.
Do you still have that relationship today?
On certain days, not all the time, you know. So, but you know, it's nothing personal.
We were talking the other day about the Lucas camaraderie, and you know, Todd and Kieran and you and all you guys all pull for one another, even though you know you're competitors. You still like to see the other guys do well, and I think that's a great tribute to all of you.
Absolutely, you know, I wouldn't say that. I will say that we're all still friends, and you know, we worked hard together, you know, we try to beat each other as hard as we can when we're in against each other. But I would say there wouldn't be any bad blood between any of us.
Dallas, this isn't the type of show where we typically spend much time talking about your current horses and training, but twice now you've kind of teased us with the two nice colts in your barn. Talk about them and who are they?
Well, the two nice horses from Mr. Fipke. One is a horse named Golden Soul, and he ran second in the LeCompte. And he's pointing toward the Risen Star, and I just think he's a really, really nice horse. So, you know, he's a horse that wants to stretch out. I think he can get a mile and an eighth and a mile and a quarter, and I think he'll be fine. And then the other one is a perfect title. He's a grandson of Personal Ensign, and he's had a couple of seconds here going long at the fairgrounds, so I've got some really high hopes for those two colts.
And obviously it would mean an awful lot to anyone to win the Kentucky Derby, but I know you living in Louisville now, it would probably be even a little extra special, wouldn't it?
Man, I'm trying every year.
Well, Perfect Soul, he ran a good race the other day. He looks like he's coming around for you. He's pretty high up there on the Derby rankings, I think.
He's a really good one, believe me. He's going to, once we get running out a little further, a mile and an eighth and a mile and a quarter, he'll sort some horses out. He's pretty nice.
Dale, let's spend a few minutes talking about your family. You're married. You have a couple of kids. Talk about them.
Well, I've been married for 31 years and got two great sons. And they're really not into the horse business or anything. They like to go to the races and stuff. And they're just not, you know, never really took to it. So you can't really push it upon them. But they enjoy going to the races. My wife loves to go to the races. But they really don't know anything much about horses. But actually, my oldest son did work for me a little bit. But he's in college, and I don't think he has any desire to work, you know, with the horses or anything. But, you know, it's fun for him to come to the races. And they're great kids. It's been a little challenging because they've had to move around a little bit throughout their school years. But they both handled it well. And they're both great, great kids.
What would your son say if I asked them who their dad's favorite horse was? What's the favorite horse of their dad?
I would think. I don't know. You'd have to ask them. I think they'd say Limits Forever.
Yeah.
What, or maybe Mito again, one or the other.
When you're not at the track, what do you like to do? What are your hobbies?
Well, I mean, pretty much my routine is pretty basic. I get up, you know, go to work, enjoy work, just enjoy the hell out of work, and I love to eat lunch down here. Lunch is a big thing in New Orleans, you know, just eat like crazy for lunch and take a nap, go pick up my little boy at school, work out. I like to work out. I like to jog, sometimes fish, and go back for feed time, and that's about it.
What's your favorite lunch place in New Orleans?
I got to be a place called La Ouza's, right by the racetrack. It's the best. Best gumbo, best shrimp po' boy in the country.
Wow. We'll have to try that next time we're down in New Orleans.
What's the place that Neil Pessin took us to?
Oh, Brightson's. We love eating at Brightson's.
Well, that's pretty fancy, but this is just good food. I mean, Brightson's is good, and it's expensive, not expensive, but it's really good. But this is just like a lunch place that's just out of this world.
You know, it's amazing. We ask that question of just about every trainer that comes on the show. What do you like to do outside of racing? And Dallas, I think the only person that had another hobby was Ian Wilkes, who said he liked to play golf. Everybody else said, my life is these horses.
Yeah.
You know, that's
well,
it.
Well, I mean, you know, we do a lot of things. We've been, you know, I've taken my kids on a lot of vacations and a lot of different things, aspects like that, you know, because that's what you're supposed to do. But, you know, I don't golf. I do like to fish a little bit. I enjoy other sports. But just enjoying my kids and my family life is probably where it's at for me.
Yeah, there's not a lot of time in the day and in the week even. You know, you're always working on the weekends. And so, you know, Mondays and Tuesdays, you know, are kind of special with your kids. I mean, a lot of trainers, you know, pick up their kids at school and try to do family things with them on Mondays and Tuesdays, because the rest of the time you're working.
Yeah. And then watching them play sports. Both my kids play soccer. The oldest one played soccer, and the little one's playing now. And, so, you know, just try to be a part of their life like that.
All right, Dallas, one final question before we let you go. Finish this sentence for me. My career highlight to this point is?
Oh, my career highlight. Well, I'll just give you two things. Are you talking about a race or just the highlight?
Whatever it is.
You know, it's just being a happy person, loving what he does all the time. And I don't like losing, but I just like what I do. And I think that's pretty much sums it up for me. I just love what I do. That's the highlight for me.
There he is. He's training.
And I'm fortunate to be able to do it and do it well.
And he does it exceptionally well. It's trainer Dallas Stewart. Nice enough to spend some time with us here tonight. Tell us his story. He has trained 676 winners for his career. Just an outstanding job. Dallas, thanks so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks for taking the time.
All right, Dallas Stewart, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, all presented by Bullet Train. And a much different story than Rudy Rodriguez in the first half of the show. But really interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, Dallas took a more traditional route to training horses, but 11 years with Wayne Lucas, I mean, that's a long, long time.
Yeah, and if you're going to learn how to handle a good horse, nobody better than D. Wayne Lucas at that time. He has just a barn full of them.
Yeah, well, he's got a barn full of them again. You never know with D. Wayne when he's coming up with the next good one. But it's not only the horses that you learn about. It's the clients and you get to meet people, and you know you're with the upper crust all the time, and you learn how to talk to the clients and make them understand what racing's all about and how they can improve their stables and all of those things. Very, very important aspects of the game. And who were we talking to the other day that said that it was their father that was gracious enough to tell them to get the heck out of the barn?
I don't remember.
Can't remember who that was.
You know, but it was interesting when Dallas started that interview and he started talking about working with D. Wayne. He said it was more like military camp. And you got to know Wayne quite well working in California. That's his operation. That's the way he handles his business.
Yeah, it's a very tight ship. And even though I never worked for Wayne, I picked up a few little things. He always had a dry erase board in his office with all of his horses listed on it. And I have done the same thing my whole life with my training horses, horses at the farm. All the horses' names are up there, and I know what, you know, where they are, what stable they're in, what paddock they're in, whatever it is. And that was something that I learned from Wayne. Everything had a place. It was all you know, in its place, and the shed row was impeccable. I mean, you could walk down there any morning. It was raked always. Matter of fact, he used to envy me, my son. My son, Miles, would come and rake the shed row in the herringbone pattern that I referred to, which is
really
Wayne's favorite thing. When Miles was like 5 years old, he knew how to do that.
Wow.
And Wayne used to ride by on his pony, and he'd yell at Miles, "Hey, if you ever get sick of working for your dad, you can come down and work for me."
Well, if you missed any portion of this Trainer Talk show, you can go back to our website. Tomorrow, a podcast will be available at horseracingradio.net. Hear our interview with Rudy Rodriguez and with trainer Dallas Stewart. You can also catch us on iTunes, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. We are back tomorrow, 3 to 7 Eastern Time, with our live racing coverage from 3 to 6, and then our listener call-in show from 6 to 7. Looking forward to that, taking your calls here in our HRN studios.
It was Mark Hennig whose dad said, "Get out of here and go to work for another trainer."
Well, we're going to get out of here, too. We're back tomorrow, 3 Eastern, on the Horse Racing Radio Network. For Lee Delapina and Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening.
Good night, Barbados.